This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
Onion sets and bulbs. And that's it for the alternative forecast and the regular forecast. We're going to move right on into a few high notes from around Cascadia. We last week, a bridge over the Skagit River collapsed in Washington State. The thing that this ought to trigger in everyone's mind, the question that ought to be asked is, what is happening to the infrastructure? What is happening to the roads and bridges, the transportation system in this country? We see train wrecks all the time. We see trucks overturning on badly maintained roads. An entire bridge collapsing is something that, despite the explanations of large trucks rumbling over it, still, as the nation falls farther and farther into the pockets of corporate interests, all of these things that benefit the general public have fallen into disrepair. There are some things that individual might just can't do. You can't aim a gun at a bridge and tell it to stay up. Yesterday, Governor Jay Inslee announced a plan to have temporary spans installed across the Skagit River. That could happen in 3 weeks. The idea is to handle cargo trucks. The remaining spans must clear inspection before the real work starts. Meanwhile, alternative routes around the bridge that collapsed last Thursday are obviously going to slow freight significantly. That of course, is of great interest to the private sector and the same corporate interests who, through a circuitous route, can indeed be held responsible for these types of incidents, which happen with increasing frequency. It's the kind of story that makes headlines in third world countries, that, along with, of course, the inevitable bus plunge, where infrastructure is eroded to such a degree that basic civil engineering projects stall. Corruption at the top siphons off the wealth of the nation. Bridges collapse because the markets are far away in unseen cities in the ether. It's an amazing situation that we have. This is the kind of thing that we don't associate with nations who sport such high numbers peeling off of Wall Street. There are 138 known minority-operated farms in Washington County, and perhaps many more operating on the down low. Those farms make up less than 8% of the county's total of over 1,700 farms. The number of minority-operated farms has, in fact, increased 8 times since the last census of agriculture, and the number of total farms has stayed relatively the same. Updated every 5 years by the Department of Ag, the census breaks down farm and ranch data by state and county. Minority farm operators are identified by racial group. So going back to 1974, Washington County had 17 farms with minority operators, and that number has risen steadily over the years. We've especially seen more and more Latino and Asian operated places. By the 1997 census, the county knew of 45. So the numbers are growing. It's a very good sign. It's healthy, and it should be noted, especially as agribusiness has decimated the central part of America, leaving it pretty much a dust bowl at this point, something which people don't like to take a long, hard look at, but nonetheless it's the case. What we're watching here in Cascadia, in Washington County, is nothing but good. There is Adelante Mujeres. It's a Latino empowerment nonprofit based in Forest Grove. It's been turning out small farmers since 2005 through its sustainable agriculture program. It's a 12-week Spanish language class that teaches Latino immigrants how to grow organic food. While some participate for the health and cost benefits, others do it with the hopes of starting their own farming businesses. Looks like it's working. In just a moment, we should be able to speak with Gar Alfovitz. He's a professor of political economy at the University of Maryland and the co-founder of the Democracy Collaborative. Here's a book out, What Then Must We Do? Straight Talk About the Next American Revolution. I'm speaking today with Gar because I have been curious about the increasing corporatization of the country. And we now have no less than the Tennessee Valley Authority, the TVA, on the block. Good morning, Gar. Thanks for being with us.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Well, this is really quite, for us here in the West Coast in Cascadia, the TVA perhaps is not well known, but it should be. Anyone who has studied history or the economic track record of the country should be well aware of it. Could you tell our listeners what exactly the Tennessee Valley Authority is and why we've come to this strange turn of events?
Well, the Tennessee Valley Authority is a very, very large public utility which was set up in the Tennessee Valley both to produce electricity but in many, many states also to control and manage the difficulties of the river system that was flooding regularly during the 1930s. So it is a large-scale public enterprise, a very successful one and very popular in the region. And also has an ecological side to it, which is, as I say, the rivershed and watershed management there.
Well, why is it then that the so-called free market Republicans are objecting to the proposed privatization? I mean, Lamar Alexander, yikes, Tennessee Republican. Why is he opposed?
Everything's upside down here. It turns out that although they love to call President Obama a socialist, this is probably the largest socialist institution other than the military services in the country. And these Republican senators from that area are very much in favor of it and opposed to the notion of selling it off to private enterprise. And the reason is their constituents like it. The energy prices are low. It does a decent job in managing the rivershed. Even environmentalists who have often objected to some of the other things, nuclear power, for instance, there, on balance in the area, favor the Tennessee Valley Authority because it's something that folks like there.
So why would, what is the idea of, why privatize? We've had Catherine Austin Fitz on the air talking about the corporatization of America and how we are increasingly seeing corporations taking over the role of things that the government is generally responsible for. We, as ostensibly elect these public officials, public elected people, who are to do the will and act in the best interest of the population. And now that corporations have entered, have basically thrown their hat in the ring with Citizens United, and are basically in the political game now as well as the free market game, it just seems extraordinary. Why is Obama going after the TVA at this point in time and with the economy where it is at this moment?
Well, I think it seems to be kind of a game they're playing in which they think that by so-called privatizing it, they may, and this is very much up in the air, they may show that they have sold something off and then the budget deficit would change marginally. Because they've sold a huge, huge public asset. So that's one of the possible reasons they're doing it for, shadow boxing with the deficit numbers. They may actually have some strong views about it. We haven't seen that they want to, privatize things just for the sake of privatizing. But that appears to be the most important single reason, just to make the budget deficit look a little better, which I think, it's kind of a ridiculous reason for doing something of this order of magnitude.
It seems hard to, why would they're not going to get very much PR steam out of this. Nobody is going to think, oh, yes, oh, remember he did that. He sold off the TVA. What a great idea. It seems highly unlikely that that would happen.
I think it is, we haven't heard him speak about this either, so I suspect that it's some staff people have gotten this through, and he certainly must have approved it, but it certainly hasn't been a major talking point that coming out of the administration, and rightly so, because I think it's going to go nowhere, primarily because the Republicans in the area are going to certainly prevent it, and as I say, rightly so. The ironies are just multiple, because some of these are the folks who've been calling Obama a socialist, and by any standard, it's these conservative Republicans who support the Tennessee Valley Authority, because it does good things in their area, even though it is probably technically as much a socialist institution as you could find, in the sense that the government owns this big and utility business and runs it as a public service.
Yeah, still there are so many more questions. I fathom it, and I'm being cynically minded. I'm looking at a lot of other questions that I would like to ask you. I'm wondering too about with the markets going gangbusters right now. If this move isn't somehow prompted by that, it's hard to understand. But nonetheless, since we are in fact out of time now, any final thoughts you'd like to leave our listeners with?
Well, in the new book, What Then Must We Do, I go through some of these things. There was an attempt, and a good idea, to use regional decentralization for public entities like this. And some of these were done in the 30s. There was a hope to do more of this rather than big national government. It's a very interesting strategy that, as I say, I take up on in the new book, What Then Must We Do.
Thank you so much for that. We've been speaking with Guy Altowitz. We'll put links to the where you can get a hold of the book, What Then Must We Do. It's an amazing book, I must say. I'm in awe, and I highly recommend it. This has been Cascadia for Tuesday, May 28th, 2013. Janet Anderson engineered the show today. Thanks so much, Janet. Kathleen Stevenson's the KBOOAM producer, public affairs director. I'm Chris Andre. Get the facts, know your rights, take a stand. Thanks for listening and stay tuned.
This is Law and Disorder.
Today on Law and Disorder, we'll learn about the number of Palestinians being held in Israeli jails.
Israeli jails, another word for a colonial prison system. Are they, quote, criminals or freedom fighters?
We'll have an update on the new film, We Steal Secrets, the story of WikiLeaks.
The title itself tells you more than you want to know. WikiLeaks didn't steal secrets. So what's the story with this film?
Stay with us.
New York City attorney and author Michael Smith.
I'm Heidi Boghossian, Executive Director of the National Lawyers Guild.
And I'm Michael Ratner, President Emeritus of the Center for Constitutional Rights.
Michael, last week a new film came out featuring our own Julian Assange. What do you think of it?
The film is called We Steal Secrets, the story of WikiLeaks. And it's a film by a well-known director, Alex Gibney, who actually won an Academy Award for an important film called Taxi to the Dark Side. Unfortunately, this film about WikiLeaks, Bradley Manning, and Julian Assange is a great disappointment, does a disservice to Bradley Manning and Julian Assange, as well as WikiLeaks, I think trivializes the incredible courage that both of them had, as well as what was revealed by these documents, both from Bradley Manning and Julian Assange. And when you say, Heidi, it features Julian Assange, it unfortunately doesn't feature Julian Assange, or maybe fortunately, considering the kind of what many would call a hatchet job that Gibney did on this film. Julian Assange declined being interviewed by Alex Gibney, and that may be what gave Alex Gibney an edge about how he dealt with Julian Assange in the film. Alex was well-funded for the film, but he didn't get an interview with anybody who is currently associated with WikiLeaks, including Julian Assange. And so this film doesn't really speak to what Julian Assange thinks or is about. And obviously he didn't get an interview with Bradley Manning
the other third person who's facing prison time is Jeremy Hammond for hacking into Stratfor and uploading to WikiLeaks. Was he mentioned in the film?
I don't think he's mentioned in the film. It was really mostly, as the title says, We Steal Secrets, the story of WikiLeaks. But let me just give you some of my observations on the film. I saw it in Sundance a couple of months ago. It was released on Friday, the 24th of May, and it'll be interesting to see what people think about the film. But the first thing that grabs you immediately is the title, We Steal Secrets, the story of WikiLeaks. WikiLeaks, as we all understand, is a publisher. It is not the organization, neither is Julian Assange, the person who took documents from the government when they supposedly had a security clearance. He's a publisher like the New York Times, like any other newspaper. And yet the film is entitled We Steal Secrets, the story of WikiLeaks. The implication is clear from that title, it seems to me, that WikiLeaks stole secrets. That's very bad for WikiLeaks, for Julian Assange, because it plays into the government's theory here that somehow Julian Assange and WikiLeaks are co-conspirators with Bradley Manning in taking secrets.
And you know, Michael, this is actually quite timely because a Fox reporter has just been accused of conspiring with a source. I believe this is the first time the government, although it's gone after whistleblowers and tried to find source material, it's the first time I think that the government has accused a journalist of conspiring in terms of trying to bring materials out. So it seems kind of a disturbing
trend. I want to talk about
trend.
That, Heidi. It's okay. The Rosen case,
right.
And it's a Fox News
case.
Reporter, yeah. And it's mm-hmm. very important to talk about that. Before I do that, I want to talk about a couple of other points with regard to the implications that Julian Assange is someone who stole secrets. First is the title. Then there's two or three other places in the film where he again has that implication. Another place is where he says, and I'll read from what we took when we were at the film, the words of it. Here's what it says in the film. In this environment of expanding secrecy, Assange went fishing for secrets to publish. To bait whistleblowers, he published a list of the most wanted leaks. So in that one phrase, it says, Assange went fishing for secrets, and then he published a list of leaks he wanted. So it's implying that he solicited and pushed for what